Meanwhile, back at the Hall of Justice, our mild-mannered podcasters were bombarded by gamma rays, bitten by radioactive bugs, mutated by toxic waste, irradiated with cosmic rays, born into a world that doesn't understand them.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode number 340 of the Talking Comics Podcast. I am your host, Steve Say. This week, I am joined by Mr. Bob Ryer.
Early happy birthday, Melissa.
Oh, thank you.
Melissa, it's your birthday.
No. Beat me to it there, Bob.
Oh, sorry.
We weren't supposed to reveal you yet.
Oh, Solomon Grundy, born on a Monday. Come on, let's go.
Introducing Joey's sub for the evening.
I'll spit on my desk.
Eisner Award winner, Professor Carolyn Coca.
Hello, everyone.
Yay! Carolyn's back.
I'm back.
She's back. So, welcome to the show. This is the crew for this week. Joey is off in a theater somewhere, sitting quite comfortably with his, what do they call it? The bill or something like that? The playbill?
Playbill?
Playbill. Yeah,
playbill on the lap and just cheering it up for his fellow actors, which is awesome. We hope he has a really good time. He will be back next week. Seeing as Joey is not here this week, that means that I am in charge of recording this week's Talking Comics, and we all know how that goes. So, I will make an apology up front and say that if there are any technical difficulties this evening, you're welcome. Brought to you by me, all the time. And super quick, just a tiny little plug, because they were very gracious hosts. My episode of the writer's experience that I talked about a few weeks ago is now live. I'll put a link to it in the show notes for this week's show. Just go to talkingcomicbooks.com. I've also tweeted it out a few times. But yeah, they got inside my head and asked me a bunch of stuff about Talking Comics and Joe Blow and writing methods and influences and music and booze and food and all kinds of fun stuff. Oh. So, yeah, if you want to walk around in my brain for a little while, you'll go and check it out. It's a very well-oiled podcast so far. They're brand new, and they have some really good backing behind them. I had a really good time. I might be doing another episode with them in the near future. We shall see. So, yeah, definitely go and check that out. That was a lot of fun. Moving on, we have some late and breaking both movie reviews this week, as Melissa and Carolyn have also seen Deadpool 2, and Melissa went to go and see Solo, A Star Wars Story.
So, I've actually seen Deadpool 2 twice in the past week. I have.
It's one more time
because
than I have.
Because the first time she saw it, she cheated on her husband with me, so then she had to go see it with him after that.
Oh. It's true.
So we will get to that quite quickly. And then of course we have, I don't know. I think we're feeling the loose lightning rounds this week. And then we have a couple listener questions. Well, one listener question really. And a host question that got a whole bunch of fun responses that we will go through as well. So that is what is on the menu. Let's get to it. And let's get some general impressions from Carolyn and Melissa about Deadpool 2. I would like for Melissa to go first.
Well, that's good, because Carolyn just pointed at me. Deadpool 2, I loved
Ooh.
It. I loved it. I think I probably liked it equally as much as the first one. Mm-hmm. I think that... the pacing is slightly different. It's stretched out a little bit slower this time around, but I actually appreciated that because I found that the jokes are also, at least from my point of view, I thought the jokes were a bit more clever, and sometimes required a little bit of thought to kind of catch what they were referring to or what was going on. So I like that, mm-hmm. that things were kind of like paced out a little bit better that way. And there's a lot of people in this film that I just love. I mean, Josh Brolin is great. What is that little boy's name? I can't remember his little name.
I just watched
Julian.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I don't know.
Oh no!
I just watched Hunt for the Wilder People for the first time.
Yeah, excellent.
He was in that.
Such
a
great film.
Really, really good. I can look up his name if you want to keep talking.
And Domino was a scene stealer for me.
Zazzy Beetz.
Which was a funny, coincidence, you know, because the last time I was on this show, I happened to talk about the new Domino comics, which mm-hmm. are probably the first Marvel comics I've read in I don't know how many years. I had no idea that she was going to be in this film.
Oh,
you didn't know in the trailers?
I didn't. I honestly did not. It just was a weird coincidence that somebody just read those comics. So it was nice because it kind of set me up with a little bit of, you know, familiarity with the character that I wouldn't have had. So.
Mm-hmm.
I don't look into movies too much anymore, like leading up to them these days, just because it's way too easy to spoil some of it, you know?
Right.
I want a little bit of a surprise. So yeah, I went into this not knowing a lot of things about what was going to happen. And it was delightful. I had a lot of fun with it, and I saw it twice this week, and I enjoyed it just as much a second time around. In fact, I caught a few jokes the second time around that I didn't catch the first time. So
wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
His name is Julian Dennison.
There you go. Thank you.
And yeah, to echo some of what you're saying, Melissa, I think one of my favorite things about the movie is that it feels very much for fans of the character. There's a lot of stuff that, like you said, the jokes are, some of them are very inside baseball. And while that would bounce off of some more casual filmgoers or whatever, like I really kind of liked picking out those things from the movie and laughing to myself where like only three people in the theater got it. So I thought that was pretty well played out.
I had to ask Carolyn a lot of questions afterward about some of these characters because I'm not so familiar with a lot of them. Mm-hmm. But
so then I had to hear myself trying to lay out Cable's backstory and realize,
boy.
I mean, it's so ridiculous. Like, and you can't
to
keep
both
a straight
me
face.
And her husband who doesn't read comics, right? He was even less familiar than I was. Yeah, and I also, you know, I want to say, like, when this was over, I think one of the first superhero comics, and there's not a lot of them, I always say that on the show, but there's not a lot of superhero comics I've read, but I've actually read, like, maybe three or four Deadpool comics, and I read them way back when I was first getting into comic books, and when I left the movie, it made me want to go back and read more Deadpool. So mm-hmm. to me, that's a good thing, you know, when I see a comic book movie, and it makes me want to go back and read more comics. It like made me miss Deadpool, and I recognize that Deadpool from the comics. Like, he's the Deadpool that I know. So
you should check out Deadpool Kills the Marvel Universe. I think you'll find that very satisfying.
It's quite okay.
Good. I believe it's Cullen Bunn. He writes a lot of Deadpool.
I know this.
You know this. Of course you know this, because you're like best friends now.
We're besties. Me, him, and the cougar.
Yes.
Okay.
It's a story, Steve. You had to listen to Sirens. It's an amazing story.
And for those of you who haven't, she was not referring to herself as the cougar in the story.
No.
Just want to make that clear.
Carolyn, your rebuttal for Deadpool 2.
It's not a rebuttal. I did like it, but I could kind of tell when we were leaving the theater that I was not as excited as she was. And I think for me, I know we're not doing spoilers just in case, right? Because you gave a spoiler warning last time.
Yeah, let's keep it in general thoughts.
So I think I had the same problem with a plot point that you did last week that you talked about. Mm-hmm. And I think I also was kind of bummed that there was someone from the first movie that I thought would have a bigger role and didn't. I too really liked Josh Brolin, and I really liked Domino, and I liked what was his dumb name? Fire Fist.
Yeah.
Because that kid is really great. But I think overall I felt it might have been an expectation situation, because I was just thinking, I am going to walk into this movie and I am going to laugh until my face and stomach hurt until it's over. And it didn't feel like that to me. I felt like the jokes were further apart. I mean, I liked all the reference jokes. I thought they were funny when I got them. I think I got a lot of them. but it just seemed like they were further apart. Like, I wasn't really laughing the whole time. And I mean, I get the point of sort of making fun of the violence and the hyperviolence and whatever, but it started to feel repetitive to me after a while. And I thought there were, even though there's a funny gag of some people dying after they did, and after I was done cracking up at that, then I was like, oh, that was kind of a missed opportunity not to have those people around longer, maybe. So yeah, I mean, overall, I thought it was good. I just thought there was some pacing stuff, and it was just not as funny as I thought it would be. And there were some plot points that I would have liked to have been different. So yes. I didn't think it was bad at all. I just didn't think it didn't live up to my expectations. And I didn't think it was kind of the laugh riot that I thought the first one was.
Okay. We are now on
big sigh over
solid
here.
Ground. No, it's fine.
I'm going to be really careful not to spoil anything, but my second watch through this, the thing that interests me is that there's enough people out there bothered by the plot point that Carolyn has an issue with, that I saw multiple articles rolling around about it, but this movie was full of jokes about pedophiles and some really over the top moments.
I kind of thought they were referencing Hunt for the Wilder People with that. Maybe.
All right. Do we want to call spoilers? Because I have no idea what you're talking about.
No, we don't have to do that.
I just find it a little bit ironic that people were offended about a particular thing that went on in this film, but not offended by the multitude of pedophilia. Jokes.
Oh, I'm offended by that too. But but also the plot point to which we are referring, it's not so much that it was just this movie. It's more like, after a few hundred times of this plot point, aren't we kind of done with it? And if you're basing your whole movie on making fun of tropes of superhero comics to the point where you're going to turn to the camera and say lazy storytelling, then maybe you could call that one out as well. Except that they didn't know what it was, so that's why they couldn't call it out.
Yeah. Yeah. Says the writer. Yeah.
Mm. Alrighty.
Alrighty then.
Now that things are nice and awkward, let's talk about Solo.
No, awkward that was perfect.
No, I know. In all seriousness, Melissa, you saw the new Star Wars movie. How was it?
Yes. I thought it was really fun. It was really fun. I feel like I repeat myself on the show sometimes, so forgive me if you guys have heard this before, but I'm a fairly new Star Wars fan. At least I consider myself a Star Wars fan in just the last couple years. So there's a lot about this movie that feels very much like the new Star Wars universe that appeals to me. There's a lot of interesting characters in here. It's a little bit like Rogue One in that, you know, there's a lot of characters in here that I wish I could see more of, and obviously we're not going to, because this is, you know, we've seen more of these characters down the road, and some of them, I don't know, some of them, I guess, just don't exist in the future somewhere. The Star Wars time jumps always confuse the hell out of me. But I think it's a lot of fun. I went into this very very, I don't know, not super excited. I felt very like neutral about it. I didn't know that I was gonna buy this. So I'm sorry, guys. I did not look up my actor names, but this new dude that plays Han Solo,
Alden Ehrenreich.
Yeah, I didn't buy him at all from the trailers as Han Solo. Yes, it's a hard mantle to carry, so I wouldn't want to be in his shoes. But you know, once I got into the film, I bought him pretty easily, and I accepted him pretty easily in that role. So I think he carried it well. And obviously Lando is fantastic, and everybody expects him to be fantastic, and he's everything that you expect him to be. My husband keeps remarking that he pulls off Billy Dee Williams, or is that his name? Billy D. Mm-hmm. Williams' voice perfectly. That like he gets his voice and his cadence and his attitude just right. So
nice.
I don't remember him that well the first time around to make that comment.
You don't remember Lando Calrissian?
No, I do. I just, again, I was not a Star Wars fan.
He's like the
based on the old films.
For a while.
I mean, I don't remember him well enough to remember what his voice is supposed to sound like when somebody else is playing
it
him,
sounds
you know?
Smooth.
It's very specific. But yeah, it's great. There's a lot of really fun and heartwarming buddy moments here between Chewie and Han Solo. Which for me were probably the peak moments of the film. And there's a couple characters in here that I just wish that I knew more about because they were really, really cool characters.
How is the new droid?
The new droid is great. K2SO is my favorite droid in the universe thus far. This droid was almost as much fun. It was a lot of fun. I think Carolyn's really going to love this new droid, especially. the new droid is a sassy pants. And
oh, nasty.
Yeah. And fantastic. We both thought, Ryan and I both thought that it was a different actress playing the droid than who it ended up being. It ended up being someone that I'm not very familiar with, but throughout the film, we kept thinking that it was somebody who we are very familiar with.
Who do you think it was?
I thought it was, what's her name? That plays Captain Phasma.
Gwendolyn Christie?
Yeah, Gwendolyn Christie, yeah. Yeah, it sounded like her, but it was not. But no, it's fun. Lots of new aliens, lots of new cool scenery, lots of action. It's, you know, it's very much a new generation Star Wars film.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have not seen it yet, but I am very much looking forward to checking it out maybe sometime this coming weekend. Did anybody else see it?
Mm-mm. I will now, though.
Nope, not yet.
All right. Perhaps we'll be back next week with some more thoughts on Solo. I don't know.
I was on the fence until that review, Melissa, so thank you.
By the way, if anybody, I know we have a few family people on this listening to the show, but we took my son to it. He's seen all the Star Wars films, and this is, I think, very light as far as Star Wars films go, so easy film for a kid to watch. There were a lot of kids in the theater when we went.
Yeah, that's why I go to the late shows. Alrighty. Cool. All right. I'm definitely still stoked to check that out. I've seen lots and lots and lots and lots of commentary on it in the last couple of days. And, I'm just pumped up. All right. Let's move on. How about some lightning rounds?
Sort of.
Wow.
Woohoo!
All right. We're going to have to start doing video so you guys can see my face. When I need you to come with some cheers. All right.
Lightning round.
Gonna hold up signs for us?
No. All right. Yeah, you know what? No, forget the lightning round. Lightning rounds suck. Let's just talk about some books, man. Bob, why don't you tell us what you have for this week?
Okay. Since there's no clock, I'm just gonna say that I only bought one new comic book this week, so it's a lot of oddball things. So bear with me. First off, and this one's definitely for you, Melissa. I read the complete collection of Next Wave Agents of Hate by Warren Ellis and Stuart Immonen, and I absolutely loved it.
Yes.
I mean,
I'm so shocked that you've never read this before, Bob.
and look, it's got two of my favorite B characters on board, Monica Rambeau and Elsa Bloodstone, and Machine Man, who in the Red She-Hulk series a little while back I started to like. And you've got Boom Boom from X-Force, Tabitha Smith, and the not to be named here because this is a family show, Captain. the group is absolutely nuts, just completely eclectic is not even good enough to say it. And they're pitted against this but actually terrorist leadership in the form of General Dirk Anger. Well, what a great name. Come on. The book is grand, snarky fun. It turns everything over on its head, all the tropes. It's Warren Ellis, so it's very strange. But Stuart Immonen's art kind of both keeps it normal and makes it goofy at the same time. I'm shocked. It did take me this long to read. I bought this, the whole $35 collection for, I think, $12 from an ABE seller. And look, it has Fin Fang Foom in it.
Yeah.
Who's going to do nasty things to Boom Boom? I really love this. Since we're not doing the regular format, what did you ladies think? Help me out here.
I'm pretty sure I've talked about this book a few times. I love Next Wave. I think this is one of the first comics I ever read, actually. It's just amazing. I think it's the most fun. I've gone back and read it probably 3 or 4 times over the years, and every single time I read it, I sit and just giggle to myself. I love it so much. I don't know anything about most of these characters, but it doesn't matter.
No,
you don't have to know anything. And I think that this iteration of these characters is probably some of the best anyway.
Yeah.
I love Machine Man. I love the moments with Dirk Anger are so great. His rants and his speeches to everybody.
Yeah.
And you know, this is early Warren Ellis, which is, I give Warren Ellis credit for being the person that got me into comics to begin with. So his weird sense of humor and his nasty sort of undercurrent to everything that he does is really what attracted me to comics to begin with. So I just love this. Yeah. I love Next Wave so much. I have a coloring book. I have a Next Wave coloring book.
Wow.
I swear, I found it in one of those kind of random little bins at the comic book store one day. I still haven't colored in it because it's just one of those things where, you know, I feel like it's like a relic and I don't want to color on it, but it also is calling to me to color on it. So I don't know. Maybe one day I'll put something on it.
You need a second copy.
I don't know how I found the first one. So far, I've not found anybody else who owns this comic book. I've talked about it several times on different shows, and people always seem surprised that it exists. Yeah.
Or the coloring book.
What? No, the coloring book, the Next Wave coloring book.
Sweet.
It was apparently a contest that they did. Who was this? Is this Marvel?
Mm-hmm.
When this came out, they did a coloring contest where they put the coloring book out and they asked fans to send submissions in for their colored pages. And I can't remember what the prize was, but that's apparently where the coloring book came from originally.
That's really cool, actually. Yeah. Nice.
They had issue 5. The other edition currently on the stand was the Crayon Butchery variant.
There you go.
Black and white on paper that's conducive to crayons.
Yep.
And when I read it, I think more recently than Melissa, was because when I was writing my book, I have a chapter about Captain Marvel and Ms. Marvel, so I wanted to be able to talk about Monica Rambeau. So I was pretty focused on her when I was reading it, or I should say, I started out trying to be focused on Monica Rambeau.
Yeah.
But you know, you're just sitting there laughing out loud. But Monica, I seem to recall, keeps trying to tell people how important she was, mm-hmm. and that doesn't work out for her too well.
I led the Avengers, she says at least 3 times in every issue.
But isn't there also something about, does Cap tell her to make a sandwich? I don't know. There's some exchange.
Yeah, he's the worst.
Yeah, I mean, I think she's remembering something about him that's not all that great. But yeah, I mean, all the characters play their part, including Fin Fang Foom. And it's just so worth it, and you don't need to know anything about these characters. I agree to read it and think it's hilarious.
What I do want to hear is the official theme song at some point, which is, it's apparently, I don't know, do you guys have the trade paperback?
I'm pretty sure it's on YouTube.
I'll have to go find that.
So
it's like Shakespeare but lots more punching. It's like Goethe, but much more crunching. I mean, from his original pitch, Next Wave, Healing America by Beating People Up. What more needs to be said?
What is it that fleshy ones? That's what Machine Man calls people, fleshy ones.
Yes.
But it manages to be a fun and interesting adventure story while parodying pretty much everything about the superhero genre that you could think of. Like Bob, what you just said, that tagline. I mean, we like to think of our superheroes as social justice warriors, right? They're fighting for social justice, but very often they are doing it by punching people in the face.
Yes, repeatedly, lots of times. I'm really glad I finally took the plunge, even though the book sat here for about 6 months.
You should always listen to me, Bob. When I tell you to read something,
I did. I bought it almost immediately, and then it sat in a pile with like so many other things. I just caught up on the 3 volumes of Velvet. I just had to read. I put things in piles, and they sit over there. I have sealed laser discs I bought 20 years ago. I'll get to them. I'll get to them one of these days. I promise.
You still have a laser disc player?
Why don't we get to Legion of Monsters? Why don't we do that?
Okay.
This is what happens when you take away the timer, Steve.
Yeah, but I'm on it. Let's go.
I also read Legion of Monsters, which is a miniseries from 2011 featuring Elsa Bloodstone by Dennis Hopeless and Juan Doe. Come on. Whoever Juan Doe is, he's great. It's a monster adventure that also co-stars Michael Morbius, Jack Russell, the Werewolf by Night, the Living Mummy, and the Manphibian. So it's kind of like the Monster Squad, only in this case, all the monsters are good guys, and they're trying to save their underground monster metropolis from destruction. So since you've got Elsa Bloodstone, famed monster hunter, can she put aside her animosity towards things terrological and actually help all these critters beforehand? I'm going to say yes, because I've read it, but I picked this up for all of $7 free comic book day. So I that was a great purchase, and you should check out Legion of Monsters.
Sweet.
And the one book I bought this week was Batgirl 23 by Hope Larson and Minkyu Young. And this is the finale of the Strange Loop story. And I thought it wrapped up in a way that really showed Barbara's intelligence and inner strength in a novel way, because she has to find her way out of a trap within her own mind. Set through sci-fi weapon employed as Batgirl tries to rescue a woman and her children from her estranged husband. The strange loop of the title has Barbara retracing familiar paths in her life, and her only way to move forward is to break from those patterns. And that metaphor, I think, for not only the characters in this story, but for many of us on the outside world, too. Carolyn, I know you not only read this issue, but you appeared on another podcast talking about it.
That is true. And I recorded that last week, but it will be out next week. It's the Batgirl to Oracle podcast, and it's part of the Batman Universe website network family and stuff. So, I mean, all of their stuff is really great. I would recommend checking it out. But yeah, you know, the podcast is called Batgirl to Oracle, so we certainly talked about Batgirl and Birds of Prey. And I agree that I think that the way that this wrapped up was good in terms of, you know, sort of the moral to the story is if you are stuck in these patterns that are not getting you anywhere, you need to break out of them. The problem that I have with it is I just kind of felt in a way like it means that it kind of felt like Barbara is where she was last year at this time in some ways. You know, she's still trying to figure herself out. And I think that what bothers me about that is that, you know, for 45 years, this was a character who had herself figured out and was confident and had a PhD and was a congressperson and was a team leader. And I understand your de-aging characters somewhat when you start the new 52, whatever. But it's kind of been, it's been going on 6 years now or whatever, whenever the new 52 started. Mm-hmm. And it just feels like she hasn't progressed a whole lot. I mean, I feel like part of the point of having them younger is so kind of they can learn and grow and do different things. And I don't feel like she's doing different things. She's kind of dated some schmoes and traveled and made some friends and other friends and
some other friends.
And so she just kind of comes to this conclusion at the end. What does she say? She says she wants to second guess herself. So she can have
endless possibilities.
I want endless possibilities. But second guessing yourself just makes it seem like you're not confident I don't know. I mean, she doesn't have to be perfect. She doesn't have to do everything right and be totally confident. But I just feel like there was some wheel spinning that's been going on for a while. That's not to say I don't like Hope Larson as a writer. I mean, I know Steve is going to talk about her shortly, but I like her. I like her Goldie Vance, and I like another independent thing that I read by her called Compass South. But I did not love this over the last year. I liked it. I wanted to love it, and I didn't.
Now let me ask a question, because I've been collecting Batgirl, but I've not kept up with it. The way you're talking about it, it sounds like the series is ending. Is it the end of the series or the end of the arc?
It's the end of Hope Larson's run.
Who's taking it over?
Well, this is number 23. And she tweeted, it was really done without fanfare. And like the day the issue came out, she tweeted that it was her idea to leave, that she had been offered other stuff, other superhero stuff even, but she wanted to focus on her creator-owned stuff. Oh. And so the next one, number 24, is, I guess, just Standing Alone, written by Sean Aldridge. And then number 25 is a crossover with Nightwing, and it has multiple writers. But then starting with issue 26, it's Margaret Scott and Paul Pelletier, or it might be Pelletier. I don't know. And she's done a lot of animation, but she's also written comics. Like, she's written Guardians. I think she's most known for Transformers. She wrote a Wonder Woman 75th anniversary story. Mm-hmm. She's got some creator-owned stuff, too. And Paul Pelletier's been around. I mean, I kind of looked up his art, and what I saw seemed to be more curvy and posy. So we'll see if that translates to Batgirl. But yeah, so I'm not really sure what to expect after this.
Are you done? Do you think?
You
sound done.
No, I can't turn my back on Babs. Come on.
That's what Mara said about Wonder Woman. Look what
that got. All right. Yeah, I know. I'm not reading Wonder Woman right now. I'll see. I'll give it a
Nobody else is there. No, I'm kidding. I'm so kidding. I'm sorry.
I'll give it a chance. I'll totally give it a chance.
All right. I guess I'll talk about my Hope Larson book in a little bit.
Okay.
It's so good. Bob, you have some other stuff on your list.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about them?
Sure. I'll run through these quickly, and I'm not sure anyone's seen any of these, but as it's Memorial Day, as with a lot of holidays, I tend to program movies because I have cable, but I don't watch much television. So it was sort of themed to the Memorial Day holiday. So I watched a bunch of stuff, war pictures and things about veterans, including the first Captain America movie. But two that sort of stuck with me is something I want to chat about here first. From 2005 and the television show Masters of Horror was Homecoming, which is directed by Joe Dante. And this is a very politically charged film. And in it, an administration spokesman, government fella, is on sort of like the Larry King show and trying to put some spin on a discussion with a mother who's lost her son during the then ongoing Iraq War. He tells her that if he had one wish, it would be that her son could come back and tell her how proud he was to give his life and how it was all worth it. Now, if anyone's read The Monkey's Paw or seen one of the versions of it, as you'd imagine, this doesn't really go well for anyone, but not in any sort of way you'd expect. Steve, you've seen Homecoming?
No, but I have seen the Simpsons version of The Monkey's Paw, so...
Okay.
Then you definitely know what he's talking about.
Yeah,
Monkey's Paw a couple of different times. No, okay. I know. I'm familiar with Joe Dante, and I'm familiar with Masters of Horror.
Okay. So. I don't want to spoil anything, but it is the denouement, as they say in French. We get into some. It's all very political. It is still very funny, and it's in a weird sort of Joe Dante way. He always mixes horror and comedy brilliantly. And this was just very, very good. So if you get a chance, check that one out. This other one, I am going to spoil the ending because it's...
You
got to have a message.
Message. Go ahead. Only a few people are going to get that. Go ahead.
This is... The next thing I'm going to talk about is one of the most important and yet rarest anti-war films ever made. It is called J'accuse by Abel Gance, and it's from 1938. He originally made it as a silent film in 1919, just after World War I. It tells of an inventor slash scientist who's actually created a substance that he feels that could end war entirely. But it's instead turned into a means to start war up again. This inventor, who's the sole survivor of his squadron lost in a battle on the last day of the Great War, World War I, falls into a grief-stricken madness, and in a very supernatural turn of events, goes to the cemetery of all the buried war dead from all the nations and actually raises them up. They march on the cities of France to try to show people who pays the true cost of our politicians and leaders deciding where we should fight and for what reasons. It's the soldiers. And to Mr. Gans's credit, in 1938 in France, is probably not the most popular thing to have been trying to make a film about. He was an important filmmaker who made the original Napoleon way, way back, and I think it's 1925. What happens here at the end, it is really one of the first sort of zombie horror movies to go with its political message, which I guess it struck me to watch these two as a double feature. What Mr. Gans was able to do was to reach out to World War I veterans who had been wounded, disfigured, maimed, convince them that their appearance in this film would help drive home that message. And these brave soldiers, these brave men, are in this movie as part of this scene. And it is one of the most harrowing finales of a movie that it is a horror movie, but it really isn't. It's the horrors of war. And it's called J'accuse. It's hanging around on some streaming sites. It has never actually had an official home video release, which doesn't mean your cranky old Uncle Bob didn't find a way to get himself a copy.
Oh, you're visiting the naughty tables of the con.
Yes, indeedy. So it was at a Big Apple con some years ago that I found it, and then found that my friend who owns Long Island Comics actually had a version with the subtitles, because the one I bought didn't once I got home. And I don't speak French. I barely speak English.
Oh, I've run into that a couple of times where I've needed subtitles for things. Bronwyn and I have watched a few movies where they don't have them, and I was like, I guess we'll just have to use our imagination.
The only one of those that I mean, Godzilla movies doesn't really matter for the most part on some of the later ones. I have a very rare Mexican horror movie called La Loba, which is the Wolf Woman from the early 60s. Looks very much like a 40s Universal. I know what these mad scientists are saying. I don't need the subtitles. I'm good to go.
All right.
I've seen plenty of English movies that, you know, you could not listen to the dialogue and enjoy it maybe a little bit more.
Yes.
J'accuse. All right. Melissa, would you like to step up to the plate?
Oh, gosh. Okay.
Are you eating?
No.
Sounds like you were eating.
Just realized that I did not have my notes open.
We're drinking a locally made cider.
We're drinking a lot of cider.
Don't. Cover for her, Carolyn. She should
It's actually true. She was in mid-sip. It's a black currant hard apple cider.
Ooh, lovely.
Nicely done.
Carolyn takes care of me.
She does.
Okay. So I'm just going to say straight up, guys, I had a rough week, and I tried to read about 4 or 5 different books for this show, and just everything was falling flat for me. And I was feeling quite uninspired this week and having a hard time coming up with something. So I decided, well, Carolyn gave me the idea. Really, I'm blaming it on her. So if it's a bad idea, it's her fault.
Thank you.
Gave me the idea to pull out something old that I really love to talk about, which kind of worked out because I noticed that one of our questions actually mentions one of these creators, which I did not know ahead of time when I picked this book.
Nice.
So, yeah. So I want to talk about 100 Bullets. This book is quite old, but I feel like the series doesn't get talked about nearly as much as it should. 100 Bullets was published under DC's Vertigo umbrella back between 1999 and 2009. It was written by Brian Azzarello and illustrated by Eduardo Risso, with gorgeous covers by Dave Johnson. The covers for this entire series are really, really phenomenal. The series ran for 100 issues and won both Eisner and Harvey Awards. So while I'm not normally a fan of pulpy noir style genres, this is one of the exceptions for me. Highly stylized and graphic violence, super realistic use of language and slang to portray various regions and locales in the story, plus complex characters and storylines all make the series one that's very rich in layers and quality. The core concept of 100 Bullets is based on the question of people willing to act on the desire of violent revenge if given the means, opportunity, and a reasonable chance to succeed. A mysterious stranger named Graves shows up in most of the early issues and gives a person who has been wronged the opportunity to take revenge by providing a handgun, 100 unmarked bullets, or untraceable bullets, and documentation about the primary target responsible for their woes. He informs the candidate that the bullets are completely untraceable by law enforcement, and as soon as they are found at any crime scene, investigations will immediately cease. The candidates are neither rewarded or punished for accepting the offer other than their own personal satisfaction. Several people do decline, but others who accept will find varied success or failure. 100 Bullets then sets off in multiple storyline directions that don't sound like they work, but they do, eventually. This series will weave its revenge-seeking characters with a group of enforcers called the Minutemen, an all-powerful trust, Roanoke Island, and Atlantic City all into one story. After reading about 4 issues this week that were, like I said, a bit of a letdown, I decided to go back and revisit one of my personal favorite series, because that's why we buy trades, right? And put them on the shelf so that we can go back and revisit our favorite stories. And this one is one that I'm having fun rereading again. There aren't many series that run as long as this one did these days, and managed to carry as much weight all the way through the story. I get asked pretty often to recommend a complete series of an indie story to those just dipping their toes into the indie world, and this is one that's usually on my list. So pick up Volume 1 on digital, give it a test run, and you'll likely be hooked pretty quickly, and then you can read the entirety of this gigantic series from there.
Mm-hmm. I have thought several times about picking that up, and now I think I will. Thank you.
You never have, really?
I can't tell you how many times I've had it in my hands. In a local comic shop that we have in the city downtown, they have a couple in the used section. And I've picked them up, put them back, picked them up, put them back. I'm gonna have to go over there and grab them. Methinks.
And that's what's kind of great about these old series, right? Is that you can sometimes find them in the bargain bin, and you can sort of collect the volumes over time.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to be in a rush to get them. But I've gone through, I think, the first 3 volumes just today, and picking it up and rereading it again, it's gotten me really excited about the story again. And I just think I haven't heard this one mentioned in a very long time. So it was awesome. It was due another talk about.
Yeah, you were talking about trades being on shelves and stuff. As we're pulling boxes from the storage unit and getting all the books together and everything, I'm finding all the stuff that I forgot that we have, and making a little pile. I'm I gotta reread. We just got Volume 4 of Rust from Wright and Lepp that Joey was talking about not too long ago. I want to do that whole run. My copy of Craig Thompson's Rabibi is here. I want to read that again. It's a whole bunch of stuff. But I am officially going to add 100 Bullets to my reading list. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Anybody else want to comment on 100 Bullets before we move on?
Mm-mm.
Go once. Mm-mm. Go on twice.
No.
Meh. All right. Carolyn.
Okay.
Would you like to go next? Do you need
sure.
more time?
No, I'm good.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Well, I did read Batgirl 23, which we already talked about. I read Batman Beyond number 20, which I feel like nobody reads except me, but I still like it just as much as I used to like the old cartoon. And the big deal about this particular issue is that there is now a Robin for the first time in the Batman Beyond universe. I feel like, should I say who it is? I don't know. I mean, it's not a huge surprise. It's Terry's brother, Terry's younger brother. And I guess the only thing really surprising is that Bruce thought it was a good idea before Terry thought it was a good idea. So Terry is being harder on him than Bruce is, which is an unusual kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then there's some romantic stuff going on. Dana is still in the picture, but maybe somebody new is in the picture who maybe used to be with the Royal Flush Gang. So that I know. Yeah. And Commissioner Gordon is in it. That is in the Batman Beyond universe. Barbara Gordon, Commissioner Gordon, still being her awesome self. So yeah, I mean, in general, I should have said, sorry, written by Dan Jurgens, Marco Castiello pencils, Mark Morales inks, Will Quintana colors, Travis Lanham letters. Sorry about that. All of you creative team people, good job. Okay. I also read Black Panther number one, Ta-Nehisi Coates and Daniel Acuna. So this is it's not quite a relaunch. It's almost like a whole different series in a way. There's a little explanatory thing at the beginning that says, like, 2000 years ago, people from Wakanda set out into space and they thought that in order to really defend themselves, they needed to conquer. And so it's a lot more art than words. And the art is, it's not necessarily my style, but it is, it's amazing. It's really excellent, very evocative, the colors too. But it's kind of really more about empire and slavery and rebellion. And so it really is different. I'm not saying that it's not characters that you know. It is characters that you know, but it is definitely a very different setting. So it was interesting. I would keep going with that. Okay, so now totally different is I read two nonfiction things that were nominated for Eisners. The first one is nominated in the Best Short Story category, and it's called A Life in Comics, The Graphic Adventures of Karen Green, and it's by Nick Susanis. He's an academic, and he's known for his book called Unflattening, which was his dissertation, but it's a graphic novel dissertation. It's about art and words and images and knowledge and how we communicate and how we learn. And it's very interesting. But anyway, this Life in Comics, it's very short. It's only 4 pages and it's free online. And Karen Green is a librarian at Columbia University. And it's kind of about how when she was a kid, she was a fan of comics. And she, you know, grew up to be this librarian. And she's basically built this huge collection of comics and graphic novels at Columbia from nothing. To the point where now, artists and writers like will put their archives there because it's such a great collection. So it's almost not the story itself that's the point. It's the way it's laid out. The panel layouts are really interesting. And there are so many different art styles in it because Susanis is trying to show you in a quick shorthand way what she's reading at different times. Mm-hmm. So there's like a part that looks like Archie and a part that looks like heavy metal and Persepolis and X-Men. There's even a Mad Magazine fold-in.
Wow.
And the idea is that you should follow what you're curious about. You know, you should follow your bliss kind of thing. So, I mean, 4 pages and for free, I would totally recommend checking it out, A Life in Comics. And the same with this other nonfiction thing, which is nominated for the Eisner category Best Web Comic. It's called Welcome to the New World, and it's by Jake Halpern and Michael Sloan. It was published in the New York Times. And in short, it's about a Syrian family who comes to the U.S. as refugees. They arrive on Election Day 2016, and it's basically what it's like for them in school and at work and at home. The art is, it's like white and blue and black. That's not to say that it's not detailed. It's just different, very different from the things that I have been talking about so far that are super colorful. But it's as depressing and heartening as you would think it is. This family, they're just doing their best. And there are people who are good to them and people who are not so great to them. And lastly, I want to talk about...
Pick it up.
I want to talk about an old thing, which is Secret Six, number 1 through 7, collected in the trade paperback called Unhinged. This was from 2008-2009. Gail Simone and Nicholas Scott. So Nicholas Scott pencils, Doug Hazelwood inks, Jason Wright colors. And the six are Catman, Deadshot, Scandal, Ragdoll, Bane. Yes, that is Batman Bane. And Jeanette. And Harley was on the team sort of briefly before that. And later there was a crossover arc with Secret Six, with Suicide Squad, and Amanda Waller was in that and whatever. Why am I talking about this now? I'm talking about this now because the whole plot of this story, it revolves around what's called a get out of hell free card. And that might sound familiar to some of you if you've seen the movie Suicide Squad Hell to Pay, because it's the exact same plot. And you might be wondering, are Gail Simone and Nicholas Scott in the credits? No, they're not.
What?
No.
Not only does it not say anywhere.
Hollywood.
That's right, DC.
Yeah.
And Warner Brothers. Not only does it not say based on a story by Gail Simone, there are two characters in it that Gail Simone created. And in this long list in the credits where it's like Deadshot created by, you know, Harley created by, it doesn't even mention the two characters that Gail Simone created.
Whoa.
And, you know, after seeing the Wonder Woman movie a year ago and not seeing her name in those credits either, when there was a super duper important plot point that she had in her run, which was Wonder Woman smacking her bracelets together and there being like kind of a sonic boom lightning thing from it, that was Gail Simone's idea. And her name was not in there, even though they were thanking people at the end who had nothing to do with the movie. And I'm not exaggerating with that. Like, there's a person who's in those credits who said to my face, I had nothing to do with this movie. I don't know why my name was there.
Wow.
This bugs me. And it bugs me because A, it's wrong. And B, back to Secret Six, number 1-7. Secret Six, number 1-7 is excellent. Because these are six characters, Catman, Deadshot, Scandal, Savage, Ragdoll, Bane, and Jeanette, that you think, who the hell are these people? I don't care about any of them. But Gail Simone and Nicholas Scott will make you care. You will not want to put this book down when you pick it up because it's got heart and it's got humor and it's got horror. There's definitely some blood going on in here. There's they're villains and they're heroes sometimes. And it's just, I really so highly recommend the Secret Six series. And I did watch Suicide Squad Hell to Pay. And there are, not only is the overarching story from this Secret Six story, but like I said, there are these two characters that that Gail Simone created. And really the only thing that they do in this Suicide Squad Hell to Pay movie is one of them's naked and they kiss, and they're two women. So it's just like this pretty unnecessary thing that doesn't need to be in there. And like, I'm glad you have an R rating and you're blowing up people's brains and whatever, but if you're just going to show this woman who is supposed to be a fury of dark side, like super duper strong and awesome, but you're only really showing her because you're showing me her nipple while she kisses her girlfriend. I don't know. That's not really awesome character development.
There was nudity in the Suicide Squad movie?
Yes, there was.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yes.
What is going on?
There's a lot of, I mean, the interesting thing about it is it has twists, as does the comic on which it is based. And, you know, it's kind of villains double crossing each other. And that's interesting and it keeps your attention. But it's like it thinks it's a Tarantino movie and it's not. It's a post New 52 DC animated movie, which means maybe the quality of the animation does not quite keep up with what they're trying to do. But it's quite violent. And yeah, there is this part where this woman is nude. But in the book, you know, like Batman and Huntress make appearances and they're attacked by cool DC villains like Cheetah and Cheshire and King Shark and Bane, who you tend to think of as being just like this brute who's full of venom. In Secret Six, you actually come to find him really interesting. And he has this very caring relationship with Scandal Savage, you know, almost like she's his daughter and he's trying to take care of her, and he makes sacrifices for the team, and you know, I can't recommend it more highly. And those of you who like Suicide Squad Hell to Pay, that's totally cool, but it's important that you know where it comes from.
Yeah,
schooled from the professor. All right. Well, now I know one movie that I don't necessarily need to see. I usually watch the DC animated stuff. I don't know how that one passed me by.
And one other thing, though, if those people who like Suicide Squad because you really like Harley, she's in it very little, which I don't understand as a DC Warner Brothers decision. Like, this is your marketable character. She just like shows up every 15 minutes and says something kooky.
I don't particularly have a problem with the violence or the nudity or anything. I thought the nudity is surprising. I don't have a problem with it. But I don't like the idea of them stripping Gail's name from the project, not giving her due for creating aspects of the animation. That's garbage. There's no excuse for that.
No, there isn't. And I mean, I don't have a problem with nudity either. Just make it equal opportunity nudity instead of making it seem like...
Yeah, get some wang in there.
Look, they're lesbians. Oh my God, they're kissing. You know, it's just, come on.
Well, that's what they think people want to see. But whatever.
And they are two attractive ladies. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, that the fact that Professor Pig is watching them kind of takes some fun out of it.
Yeah. Oh. See, oh man, I could make a really disgusting comment right now, but I'm not going to. Not going to. Something about a corkscrew. Okay.
Ooh.
Let's. He's a big man.
She can see the face that Carolyn's making right now.
Like a flesh slinky going downstairs.
All right.
Check, all right. Please. Keep it clean. Yeah. It's a kid show. Bob said at the beginning, kid show.
I think. All right. Is flesh slinky going to be the title of the show?
I think it has to be.
I don't know. I'll probably get a message from upstairs. Like, what is this? Yeah. Like, you aren't there, man. You didn't know. It's not in your head, man. I can't unsee it. All right. Is that all you have for us, Carolyn?
That is all, yes.
Well, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Okay. I have a few books for everybody this evening. I'm going to try to keep this short so that we can get to some of our questions. The first book, by the way, actually super quick, I read a bunch of really good stuff. I've been having some off weeks, kind of like Melissa mentioned, where you read a bunch of stuff and it just wasn't grabbing you. But this past week, I read a whole bunch of stuff. One thing in particular, I'm saving until next week because I need to finish it, and it deserves a proper presentation. But just super quick, I read Rogue and Gambit from, oh my God, help me. Kelly Thompson. There you go. Kelly Thompson. Her name is not Kelly Shit. It's Kelly Thompson. Wow. I blanked on that for a second. Anyway, it was wonderful. It was really, really, really nice. I highly recommend it. Everybody check it out. What else did I read? I don't know. Things. I'll talk to you about All Summer Long by Hope Larson, written and drawn by Hope Larson. So this book, All Summer Long, is about a girl named Bina, who is 12 years old, going on 13, and her best friend and neighbor, Austin, they've known each other pretty much since birth. They do something called the Summer Fun Index. Every summer, they get together and they make a list of creative and fun things to either do or notice or count over the summer, and they keep track. And at the end of every summer, they add all of their experiences up, they come up with a number, and then each year they try to see and do more things and add to their life experiences as friends. It's a really sweet tradition and something that Bina really, really loves. However, this summer coming up, Austin is going away for a month to a soccer camp. And both Bina and Austin are at this age where things are changing, whether it be interests, whether it be friend groups, whether it be priorities. Austin is very much looking forward to kind of spreading his wings. Meanwhile, Bina just wants to be a kid. She's not really looking forward to the changes in school coming up, and she just wants to enjoy her summer with her friend. When she finds out that she can't do that, she falls into a bit of a depression and becomes upset and pretty much ends up binging Netflix for the first couple of days, when all of a sudden the parents change the passwords and force her out of the house. Ooh. Upon being forced out of the house, Bina comes into contact with Austin's like badass sister, right? Like she's kind of the mean one that you don't really, you avoid her. Turns out that she's actually pretty cool sometimes. And she also is into some cool music, which is actually Bina's thing as well. And to move along, they basically, they form a bit of a friendship, and Bina ends up learning a couple of things from her. They share a couple of things in common. And she starts to come to terms with the idea that Austin is maybe off making other friends and doing other things, and she perhaps needs to start looking for ways to better herself and change herself as well. So one of the things that I love is that she actually turns to music to do this. She already plays a little bit of guitar, but she becomes really inspired by this band that she was introduced to, and she starts to listen to their music and tab it out and play it and sing along, and she starts to write her own music and becomes really inspired to kind of just soak it all in and really give it her all, and possibly at the end of the summer looking to start a band, which I thought was really cool. So my favorite thing about this book, I loved the dialogue. The dialogue was so good. It read so naturally, like the voices of these young kids kind of growing up and entering their tweens and doing the whole bit and different priorities and everything. And it's basically, the story is, for me, was telling you that it's okay to explore who you are and your interests. And it's okay that your talents and your interests change as you get older, that it's a natural part of life and you should embrace it instead of fear it and trying to remain in the past. There's also a lot of relatable friendship drama in this book too. Sometimes I find that I can't connect, especially with some of books that are geared toward younger readers. But this one, like, I had been to the places where these two friends were in this story, and not knowing where you stand with a good friend of yours. And I thought it was just really sweetly put. I love where they end up at the end. I won't spoil it for you. And just a really, like, a feel-good read about life-altering changes and how, like, one summer can change everything for who you are and what you're going to be doing going forward. And I thought it was really inspiring and really, really cool. So that is All Summer Long, I Hope Larson. And it's put out by FSG Publishing. I do not know what that stands for. That's what it says on the spine. Okay. Moving right along. Batman, White Knight, Sean Gordon Murphy, numbers 1-8. I said I was going to wait until the end to read this whole thing. I did, and hot damn. I loved this book. I loved it. I'm going to say it again. I loved it.
Is he doing the writing for this or just the art?
Yes, he's doing both. This is his. This is like straight up Sean Gordon Murphy, Batman-ass Batman.
Love me some Sean Murphy, so I might read this.
Yo, let me tell you something. This was fresh. This was something new. This was fun. This was bold. It was giving me a different kind of Batman story, and I soaked it in. I thought it was flipping awesome. So the setup for this thing, real quick, is that it is a dissection of Batman and the character and who he is and who he is to Gotham, but the spin is that he's going after the Joker. The Joker is actually like segueing or hoverboarding his way through the city. And Batman is just sick and tired of him. He's tearing ass through Gotham, and he's like riding along rooftops, and things are caving in. He's like cornering into work zones, and construction workers are getting hurt at his expense. And he finally corners the Joker in this like pharmaceutical factory, and he's beating the living crap out of him. And somebody in the shadows is filming the whole thing. And the Joker makes a speech about how there's a medication that can help him, that if he takes it, he can be Gotham's savior. So Batman takes him at his word, and he takes the pills and he starts shoving them down his mouth. And it looks like he's going to kill him. The whole thing is filmed. It goes onto social media and it blows up. And basically the question becomes, is Batman good for Gotham? How does he work with the GCPD? Who are we entrusting our city to? The whole kit and caboodle. Mm-hmm. Anyway, the pills work. And so the Joker goes from the Joker to Jack Napier. It doesn't mask the Joker. It like puts him in a pocket and tucks him away in Jack Napier's mind. So for like at least 90% of this 8-issue series, you're getting Jack Napier cracking and on the verge of letting the Joker back out. So it's this really wild ride of seeing this like alternate perspective of who Batman is and how he's the menace to Gotham and how the Joker can save it. And he does that to a point. He uses a nefarious plot to do it, but Gotham does move in a positive direction. But when you look at like the puppet master of the plot, when you look at the artwork of how Sean Gordon Murphy draws all of these characters, Poison Ivy, his Croc is ridiculously cool. One of my favorite versions of that character ever. There's this whole thing with Clayface, where Clayface is being controlled by the Hatter's technology, and they kind of break Clayface down into a powdered form and then put it in food and feed it to all the villains. So now Clayface and the technology is in their system and they can be mind controlled by the Joker. And he's staging wars around Gotham for him to come in and be the White Knight and save the Gothamites from these villains. And Batman knows, but there's nothing he can do because he's incarcerated. It's crazy. But also, one of my favorite things about it is the exploration of the Joker and Harley's relationship. There's a thing, they do it in the first issue, so I'm not going to really, I'm going to say spoilers a little bit, but this is a major, major thing about the book. There are two Harleys in this book, okay? There's the one that we know, they're the Suicide Squad Harley. And basically what we come to find out is that the Joker's abusive relationship toward Harley, at least for a portion of it, was not actually put on Harlequin. Harlequin left the Joker at one point in DC history. By the way, this is all an Elseworlds thing. This is not canon, this story. This is all just a Batman story. But the thing, the hook is, or the twist, is that Harley left the Joker at one point because of the way he was treating her, and he was so fixated on Batman and so fixated on his plot that he didn't even notice. Like, that's how that's how dismissive and terrible he is, and that's, she was fed up with him. So she left him and he didn't even know. Somebody recognized that the Joker was no longer running around with Harley and took her place. That's how we got the Daddy's Little Monster Suicide Squad Harley. Yeah. So Jack Napier comes in, or rather Harley comes in and exposes the fake Harley, or the new Harley. And Jack immediately, the apology to Harley from Jack, like the better part of the Joker, the part that she knows lies deep down. That's what you get for a vast majority of the book. They are in love, and they are in like respectable love. The first thing he does is give her an apology, and it's pretty much everything we've ever said on the podcast about the Joker and Harley relationship. It's amazing. Like, I read the page 3 times because I couldn't believe that it was all there on the paper. I was like, oh my god, like, we've talked about this so much and here it is. Like, it was in this story, or waiting to be in the story. This is so cool. And so they form this like political unit between the two of them. And it just ends up being this absolutely artfully gorgeous Batman story that, for me, over the last couple of years, like, I've enjoyed a lot of Batman stuff, but this felt fun and new and just crazy. There are whole sections of this story that it's just art and just action. And the Barbara Gordon in this, the Batgirl stuff is amazing. The Nightwing stuff is really good. I loved it. I loved it all the way around. I picked it up. I'm like, oh, maybe I'll read this. And I couldn't stop. And I absolutely super loved it. It's Batman White Knight, Sean Gordon Murphy. If you are a Batman fan, you didn't pick this up, I really, really, really think you should. I think you'll enjoy it.
I love Sean Murphy's art especially, but he also, man, that man writes a relationship like nobody's business. I love the way that he works relationships out on paper.
Yeah. A lot of what went down in Tokyo Ghost was you could draw parallels to the Harley and Joker stuff with that. Like, there's definitely elements there. And it was real satisfying. and very gratifying to see their relationship the way that I know they could be if he would just stop being such a monster. And there's some really good nods to how Harley is good for him in certain ways when she's approaching him at a certain level. Anyway, really quick, because I don't want to go on and on. I just want to go into some questions. But I also read Green Lantern Earth 1, Volume 1. The Earth 1 books are these DC Elseworld stories. There's been a couple of them. The Batman, Superman, Teen Titans, Wonder Woman. So now this Green Lantern one has come out. And the reason that it caught my attention is because it's by Corinna Bechko and Gabriel Hardman, with art by Gabriel Hardman and colors by Jordan Boyd. Now, Corinna Bechko and Gabriel Hardman, I don't know, Melissa, have you ever read a series called Invisible Republic?
No.
Okay. You might want to. It's about journalism in a post-apocalyptic war zone. Like, how do you get information out in an age where everything is so decrepit and broken, and where does the truth stand and all of that stuff? It's super, super good. And so they're tackling this Green Lantern book. Now, admittedly, I've only read a handful of Green Lantern, so I'm not quite sure of how much of this is new or canon or what. But first of all, it's absolutely gorgeous. It almost looks like an old school alien, like Ridley Scottish kind of backdrop. And you have Hal, who's out in space, and he's working for a company that they're collecting these materials that they're going to break down and sell to a company, and they're looking for a big score. And he ends up finding a ship. Of course, the ring is inside. But the hook to this story is that he's alone in his, like, Green Lantern-ness. He doesn't know how it works. And so it kicks in, and he gets into a fight with this this thing called the Manhunter. It's this giant robot that basically, when the ring activates, so does this robot. It wakes up and it comes after him. And so after he defeats the thing, he's still surrounded by the Green Lantern's light, and his his fellow science officers and everything that are on the ship that he's a part of, they won't let him back in because they think it's radiation. And so they abandon him. And he basically loses his willpower to get back to Earth, and he loses control of the ring. And he falls, he gets rescued, spoiler alert, he gets spoiled by Kilowog. But Kilowog also doesn't know how to use the ring, and he's asking Hal for help. So you get this, like, super-duper origin story of Hal learning how to be the Green Lantern pretty much on his own. And it's really epic and really cool. The space battle between the Manhunter and Hal, it is just, for me, was worth the price of admission by itself. The book's like $18.99 or something like that. Those like 10 or 12 pages of silent battles in space were so epic and so cool. And yeah, if you've been enjoying the Earth One stuff and you dig the Green Lantern or have read one of their works, either Exile, Planet of the Apes, or Invisible Republic, you should read it, because it's a damn good time. And there's lots of potential for Volume 2. They leave it on a very, very high note that when Volume 2 comes out, I will definitely pick it up. All right. Good stuff. Okay, so we have no books for open discussion this week, so we're just going to move on.
I mean, we kind of opened discussion next wave, didn't we?
Yeah.
Sure. It happened. It happened on its own. It's a beautiful thing. Okay. Bob, would you care to read your question to the group, and then we'll go around the room?
Okay. It was my turn to come up with something, so there's this. If you could have a creative team, living or dead, known primarily for their work at one of the big two, ply their talents on an iconic character at another company, what would the team be and whose adventures would they relate? Now, I came up with an example, and one of our listeners, Kara at Kaylin Gulo, came up with the same example. So what she says, Claremont Byrne on Classic Justice League, but must include Black Canary and Green Arrow. So that's kind of where I was headed with this. So who would like to go first?
Well, why don't you go first, Bob?
okay. Claremont and Byrne on Justice League. Actually, I have a whole bunch. I'll do a couple and we'll move on.
Of course you do.
Oh, boy.
Didn't see that coming.
Okay. How about Gail Simone and Nicola Scott on Fearless Defenders?
That was
starting off with a big one.
That was kind of close to mine, Bob.
Oh, I'm sorry.
What do you have, Carolyn?
I have Gail Simone and Nicola Scott on either Spider-Woman or She-Hulk.
Nice. Or she. Either way, I'd buy either one. Steve, what do you got? Well, we'll go around the table this way.
Okay, I have two from me and one from Bronwyn.
Okay.
Speaking of Nicola Scott, she would like to see Greg Rucka and Nicola Scott on a Kate Bishop book.
Nice.
For me, I would like Tom King and Joelle Jones to reunite for Doom Patrol. I think that would be ridiculously fun. And my last one, I have Jeff Lemire and Andrea Sorrentino on a Swamp Thing title. Yeah. All right. Who wants to go next?
I only came up with one, and I was thinking of this question very literally, like to a creative team of two people who are currently working together or have already worked together.
Yep.
And switching them. So I'm going to pick Rick Remender and Jerome Opena, who did the 7 to Eternity series.
Right.
Working on a new Death series, Death of Sandman.
Wow.
I think that would be dreamy.
nicely played.
That actually was not an intentional pun.
Oh, okay.
Puns are always intentional.
It would also be endless.
Oh. Endlessly dreamy. I like
All right. Bob.
Okay. I also came up with a She-Hulk. Amanda Connor and Jimmy Palmiotti.
Ah.
Doing a She-Hulk book. How about Mark Waid and Chris Samnee on Batman?
Ooh.
Sure, yeah.
Ooh.
Mm. Carolyn, you got another?
No.
Okay. Steve, you want to throw one in before I just rant like crazy and start reading our listener responses?
I would like very much for you to read your list.
Okay. You mentioned Green Lantern. How about Stanley and Jack Kirby doing Green Lantern?
Hmm.
I mean, their ability to do cosmic and epic and everything seems that would really work.
Ooh, you just made me want a Jason Aaron and Russell Dauterman Green Lantern.
Oh, absolutely.
That would be nice.
Right. Flipping that, how about Denny O'Neill and Neil Adams doing Thor?
Ooh, yeah.
Hmm. I'm all over the lot. How about, since they sort of did the DC version, how about Marv Wolfman and George Perez doing X-Men?
Hmm. Yes.
Slide them the other way.
Yeah. Or New Mutants.
Yes. Maybe even.
I think I'd rather a New Mutants.
Yeah.
There are enough X-Men books.
Okay, I thought of one for you, Bob.
Okay. Sure.
Marston and Peter on a Sue Storm book.
Okay. I'll definitely go with that. I had them on my list too. We're talking about Dr. William Holt Marston and Harry G. Peter, of course, from Wonder Woman. What if they did, in the same time period, Marvel's Miss America, Madeline Joyce, or we could move them up to today and they could do America Chavez?
Yeah.
Could work. Could definitely work. Steve, you getting any ideas where we're going? You had another one quickly.
Nope.
Okay.
Sorry.
That's okay.
I have, as the show has gone on, I have developed a pretty bad headache. It has absolutely nothing to do with any of you, but it's really all I can think of in the moment right now.
Okay.
It really hurts. Keep going. You've got this.
Okay. I have one that, even though he stole one of Joey and my ideas from a couple of weeks ago, Jeremy Whitley and Elsa Chartier on The Middlemen.
Whitley.
Hey. But I think I can imagine her art and his writing and Doc Magnus's Middlemen. And we discovered during this week, Carolyn, that Steve is a big fan of The Middlemen.
My daughter had to do a project on one of the elements in the periodic table, and suddenly my partner was like, is there a comic where people are elements or they're metal. Are they men? Are they, were there metal men? Like, yes, you should talk to Bob about that.
Yeah. It is one of my favorite books from the old days, from the old, old, old days. One of the first things I ever bought. So that sort of fills it up for me, except for some, you know, half-baked ideas I haven't even gotten to yet. So let's just jump to, should we go to, let's go to Twitter. Let's do the Twitter. So we have C.S. Weber, who's at C.S. Weber, C-E-E-E-S-S-W-E-B-B-E-R, just to be right here. Wade, Samdy, and Wilson on Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles or Superman. I know Wade's done some Superman, but not with this team, which I think would be amazing. Mm-hmm. We have formerly known as Giant Woman at Geek Country Lady. Hi, Sarah. Could I please have Erica Henderson and Ryan Noor taking on something in the Princeless universe? Maybe a coming-of-age tale or of a second or third in the line to be the throne princess who just wants to be a scientist or something similar. I want cute, funny, clever, techie princesses, okay? We agree, Sarah. Or, and this may be sacrilege to say in front of Joey, good thing he's not here, I'd like to see Jason Aaron and Russell Dauterman take on a previous pantheon for some alternative wicked and divine history telling.
He would totally be down for that.
I think he would. I think that would look pretty amazing.
Yeah.
We also had on a little earlier today from Matthew Seddon, who's at Seddo, S-E-D-D-O, then an underscore, I guess. He'd like to see The Shadow by Tom King and Becky Cloonan take my money.
Ooh, take my money. That sounds nice.
Yeah. Yeah, I was trying to think of someone to do The Shadow. All I came up with was Jim Steranko.
What if we brought Darkman back? Remember Darkman? Don't look at me.
Yep.
With Liam Neeson and Frances McDormand, people forget who did that movie. That was fun, that first one.
Oh, that movie. That movie was so much fun. Didn't Sam Raimi do that movie?
Yes, he did.
He did. Okay.
It was when they were trying to do superheroes and didn't quite get anything right. It was in that whole period where they did The Phantom, The Shadow, The Rocketeer.
That's right. Oh, The Phantom with Billy Zane.
Zane, yeah, and Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Those were dark times.
We were just watching with some friends The First Blade the other day, and that is still awfully good.
Oh, that's a great movie.
Yeah. Oh, and let's go back to what we're doing. Matthew Seddon also wants to see a Godzilla story by Scott Snyder and Jeff Lemire. I can see that. I'd buy that.
I can see Lemire drawing Godzilla. That'd be fun.
Yeah. Fabian Lang, who's at Fabian Lang. That's convenient. He'd like to see an epic story in the D&D universe by Frank Miller, drawn by Jim Lee, and colored by Chris Hollingsworth. I know I cheated a bit. Okay. No, it's certainly okay. The sort of 300 storytelling version of Frank Miller with D&D. Yeah, I get that. I'm for that.
May we recommend our D&D Adventure podcast, if you have not checked that out yet. It is quite good.
Well, thank you. Brian is our new Dungeon Master, by the way.
How's that going?
It's going very well. We've got some episodes being prepared as we speak, I'm sure. We had some scheduling problems, so we're a little behind, but you wouldn't know it until I just mentioned it. But Brian's come up with a really interesting and very different sort of adventure, and Bobby's now playing with us.
Is it the same crew? Do you have any new players or guests?
Well, we have Bobby now on the other side of the Dungeon Master board.
Mm-hmm.
And we will, I think, at some point be bringing on some special guests. I'm just saying. But I don't know who that is yet. We have another answer here from Sean at Argyle Eater. Brian Azzarello writes and Sean Murphy draws a newly incarnated Darkwing Duck.
Let's get dangerous.
Yes, I like the way you think, Sean. I approve.
Yeah. And yes, I realize this isn't a big two fame duo, but OTF well. Ha ha!
Who cares? It's Darkwing Duck. Darkwing
exactly.
Duck rules.
I'd like to thank everyone for their fun responses. Are we doing another question next week, Steve?
We are, but we don't know what it is or who's picking it yet. I think it's actually Joey's turn to pick a question.
Okay.
So when he's done theatering it up, we will post them. We usually post them on Twitter come like Monday, Tuesday, mm-hmm. To get some answers. The only reason we didn't do it yesterday was because it was Memorial Day. But yeah, so yeah, we can look forward to that. Yeah, we have, I don't know if everybody saw this, but we actually have a listener question.
Yes, we do.
For this week.
Go for it, Steve.
Yep. If I can, it's also from Matthew Seddon.
Yes, it is.
So he says, what's your favorite soundtrack to a movie, to a comic book property? I personally loved the album created for the Black Panther movie. I'm also reading Prism Stalker, which has an individual track to listen to for each issue, which has really enhanced the experience for me. That sounds very familiar. Didn't Joey talk about Prism Stalker?
I think so.
On the show a while back?
I do believe you're right.
So I kind of went, well, not hog wild with this question, but I have at least four albums that I can mention, and they came to me immediately, which I thought was I was like, oh man, how the hell am I going to do this? And then they all just threw in there. Yeah. So my first one is the classic, the comic book soundtrack to end all comic book soundtracks, and that is The Crow, the original Crow soundtrack with The Cure, Machines of Loving Grace, Stone Temple Pilots, Nine Inch Nails, Rage Against the Machine, Violent Femmes, Rollins Band, Helmet, Pantera, For Love Not Lisa, My Life with a Thrill Kill Cult, The Jesus and Mary Chain Medicine, and Jane Siberry. Oh my God. Ah, it's so good.
1995 wants their album back.
Yeah, no, this, like, look, hey, I got more. That's the one, though. That's the soundtrack. They don't get any better than that. I also happen to like the Crow City of Angels soundtrack. It's not as good, but it's got some stuff in there. Let's see. White Zombie's got that cool mix of I'm Your Boogeyman on here. PJ Harvey's Naked Cousin is really good. The Bush song is decent. Deftones are on here with Teething, one of my absolutely favorite songs from them. And it also points out how much Courtney Love sucks at singing. She's the worst. I knew she was bad, but then I found the soundtrack today when I was looking up stuff for this question. And I can get down with Hole, like Live Through This has some really classic tracks on it, but her cover of Gold Dust Woman, woof. It is so. Go ahead, Melissa.
When I was trying to do my research to come up with the answer to this, I remember reading something briefly about this album that you're talking about, and it mentioned that Courtney Love put this album together, or had some leadership role in putting it together. And as soon as I saw her name, I was just like, nope, not that one. And I just moved on to the next.
She's the worst. She won class challenge. She's makes me want to throw up. Anyway, really quick, I have two more. In the news today, Jamie Foxx will be Spawn for Todd McFarlane's new Spawn movie. So there's a little bit of news for you. But the soundtrack to the original Spawn was pretty cool in that it is a series of mashups from a whole bunch of different bands. So you have Crystal Method doing music with Filter. You have Marilyn Manson with the Sneaker Pimps. Who else we got in here? Korn with the Dust Brothers. Butthole Surfers with Moby. Metallica with DJ Spooky, of all things. Silverchair with Vitro. Henry Rollins with Goldie. And Incubus with DJ Greyboy. There's a whole bunch of other stuff on here, too. But for the time, it was pretty cool. I don't know if it holds up today, but it was pretty neat. And I have one more. And that is the Tank Girl soundtrack. From back in the day, the Lori Petty Tank Girl. What's with the yeesh?
I know. I thought for sure you were going to pick mine, so I'm glad you didn't.
No. But Tank Girl's got Bjork on it. It has Devo. It has L7, Hole, Bush, Portishead, Belly, Veruca Salt, Joan Jett. Like, come on. It's awesome. It's awesome. I remember one of my first plane rides ever, I was listening to the Tank Girl soundtrack. And I was shocked to find out that some of my favorite songs were actually covers of other songs. It was when the idea of cover songs in general was like really beginning to dawn on me that not everything I heard was theirs for the first time. So kind of like The Cure's Burn on the Crow soundtrack. I'm always telling people, like, that's my favorite Cure song. And then my friend Pete's like, you know that's not their song, right? I'm like, don't ruin this for me. Melissa, what are your albums or album?
Okay, I just got to say my mind is blown right now.
Why?
I'm here, like, I'm trying to hurry up and do, I have one answer, but I'm hurrying and doing some research while I was listening to you to come up with another one. And I just came across this whole article on Spotify comic book soundtracks. I didn't know this was a thing. There's soundtracks on Spotify by all these different comic book writers and artists. My mind is blown. There's one for Descender. Awesome. There's one for Witches. There's one for Rebels from Brian Wood. Southern Cross from Becky Cloonan.
Holy shit.
Like, I'll share this link with you guys. I'm just like, I'm going to spend the rest of tomorrow on Spotify listening to all of these soundtracks. Spider-Gwen, Jason Latour. Like, I didn't realize that people were on Spotify making soundtracks for comic books. Okay. I'll move on to my answer now. Sorry.
That's good. That's big help. We like that.
My mind is blown. I chose Scott Pilgrim versus the World. That's my favorite. We are Sex Bomb Mom. Yeah. it's like GarageBand love all the way through. And I love it. And it's so much fun. So Sweet. That's what I picked.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Carolyn, what do you have?
I'm not prepared for this question.
Boo! Okay.
I know. No, the Spotify thing sounds cool. The first thing that I thought of, and this is a bit of a cheat, but I'm going to say Once More with Feeling, the soundtrack to the Buffy the Vampire Slayer musical episode.
It's a stretch, but we'll accept it.
Thank you.
That's a great episode.
Then I should mention Melissa Benoist singing Moon River from the Flash Supergirl crossover from last year, which was lovely.
Well, and all the songs from that episode.
Yeah, that was it. Was the song that he was in, Running Home to You?
Which
Yeah, that was a goodie.
And then Jesse Martin and Victor Garber singing More I Cannot Wish You from Guys and Dolls. Awesome.
See, we got you, Steve. You were not going to allow it, and we're jumping all over it.
All right, what do you got? What do you got, Bob?
I've got a couple because the way the question was worded, and now that I know there's all this Spotify stuff I have to look at, but David F. Walker, for his first Shaft series, had a whole listing of cool songs that you should be listening to while you're reading the book. So, of course, it had Isaac Hayes' original Shaft. It had Sly and the Family Stone, had some Bill Withers, had the Four Tops, Are You Man Enough, which is the theme from the third Shaft movie. Oh, really cool stuff. Yeah. Same sort of idea. Then in terms of actual soundtracks for superhero movies, Captain America, the First Avenger, Alan Silvestri, and you have that lovely, you know, the crazy song, The Man with the Plan and the Radio City thing that has... Crazy as it sounds, I hear that and I get kind of teary. It's like, wow, this is a song that actually gets this 40s period. But the march when Cap saves Bucky and all those soldiers, that's just great stuff. Today is actually, well, it's yesterday for you folks listening tomorrow, but today is Danny Elfman's birthday.
Bingo, bingo.
So for me, Batman Returns is just an awesome soundtrack, and I don't know if this counts as a comic book soundtrack because there were trading cards first and then a comic book, but Mars Attacks is one of the greatest goofy soundtracks of all time.
Oh, I want to watch that movie again. I haven't seen that in ages.
It's pulled out of the rack. It's going on as soon as we're done.
Oh, I remember that movie being so much fun. I hope it holds up.
Oh, it still does. It's even better in some ways because we've seen some other things try to be that and can't be. It's just so bizarrely Tim Burton and so perfect. Two Superman pieces. Obviously, John Williams' original score for Superman the movie.
Yes.
Just you can sing the words in your head, even though there aren't words to this Superman song as it works. And Can You Read My Mind? That flying sequence, still special. My first encounter with superheroes was watching George Reeves on television. And the score, a lot of it's library music, but the original theme was by a fellow named Leon Klatskin. And there's a certain point in this where there's this harp glissando and it just picks up and it's faster than a speeding bullet and all that jazz. And I'm brought back to being 6 years old in front of the TV with milk and cookies or whatever. Just so evocative. And it's not a soundtrack, but because most of it's pretty good. I shouldn't say that. That electric cello riff in the Wonder Woman movie is so thrilling that I just had to make sure I mentioned, even if it's only a couple of minutes at a time, that is some great stuff. That is just how you throw that out there. So that's it for me.
Very nice. Alrighty. Let's talk about some of the books that we're looking forward to this new comic book day. Bob, are you picking anything up?
Yes, I've got a bunch of different sorts of things, too. One of which you're going to love, but I'm going to do that one second. Coming out this week is the Where We Live charity book about Las Vegas.
Oh,
with
okay.
Tons and tons of great creators talking about their experience with that city and the tragedy and so on and so forth. So just as Love is Love was last year, this is for a major cause. So it's out there in the stores tomorrow. I think it's 16th.
And what's the name of it again?
Where We Live.
Okay.
J.H. Williams curated this piece, but I think Gail Simone, Kelly Sue DeConnick, lots of folks involved in this one.
Wow, this is the first I'm hearing about this.
Yeah, that's for tomorrow.
All right, I'm going to get that.
There's a book. Here's one I think you're going to be interested in, Steve, but I'm going to read you the synopsis. It is called, well, actually it's from Black Mask Studios, and it is called We Are the Danger. Written, illustrated by Fabian Lillet, colored by Claudia Aguirre, and lettered by Taylor Esposito. Starting as the new girl in your senior year of high school is never easy, and Julie Moliari is having a terrible first day until she meets Tabitha. After a night out at a rock show, their friendship quickly grows, and before they know it, the two form a band with their sights set on a record deal. They just need to win it in a nationwide Battle of the Bands competition.
I recognize the cover for this.
Yes.
And
do you know who edits this book? Our friend.
Is this?
Our friend.
I was going to say, yeah.
This is Stephanie's new book.
Ooh.
So, gotta read that one. We also have Marvel 2-in-1 number 6 and the conclusion of Abbott this week.
Yes. All right. Melissa or Carolyn, do you want to read your list? Do you have any?
Go ahead. I have one, but I'll let Carolyn go first.
She's busy looking at Spotify stuff now. we're never going to get her back. I have a few things I'm interested in. Princeless, Raven the Pirate Princess, Year 2, Love and Revenge, number 8, Whitley. My Little Pony, Ponyville Mysteries, number 1. Probably the only thing my kid loves more than horses is mysteries. So these two things in one package, her little brain is going to blow up. So that should be adorable. Barrier number 5. I read the first one on Free Comic Book Day, and Jessica was talking about it, and so I'd like to wait until I'd like to read them all together. So I haven't read the last couple, but I want to look at that. Saga number 52. We always it's hard to keep talking about Saga, but you know, maintaining its excellence.
So we just don't talk about it on the show anymore.
I know. New Ms. Marvel.
Yes.
And I'm considering Star Wars Lando Double or Nothing number 1 of 5. But I'm not really sure if I would actually get it today because I got the Last Shot book and I haven't read that yet. I am still keeping up on Star Wars comics and novels, everybody. Don't worry. Hopefully we'll have something for you year-end wrap-up at the end of the year like we have before.
There we go.
I was going to talk about Star Wars comics today, but I decided not to for that reason. But anyway, the Last Shot book has good reviews. I think I'd like to read that before checking out this comic, but I'll give it a chance.
Right on. Melissa, how about you?
I just want to say that I still do bring up Saga on the show occasionally.
Yes, you do.
Occasionally.
Everybody starts freaking out that I'm going to give something away, so...
It's a hard book. It's a hard book to talk about. I don't even know how many people still read it.
Well, was the last time you mentioned it when the first page was that?
Yeah, that was the last time I mentioned
it.
Yeah. All right. Let's see. Harrow County number 31 is coming, which is the last book before the end. Yeah. There's only number 32 is the final episode, the final issue. I always say episode instead of issue, don't I?
You do.
Wilds number 3. Which has been taking a long time to come out, but I'm happy to see it's out. Labyrinth Coronation number 4. And Mech Cadet U graphic novel is out. For all of you guys who have not been listening to all of us talk about how great that book is, now it's in a graphic novel, so you can catch up and read it all.
All right. Is it all collected into one thing, or is there going to be a volume 2?
I don't know.
Well, the book's not around anymore. I was wondering if they wrapped it all up into one thing. We'll have to find out.
I would assume that they did if they've... I would assume that they did. Do you remember what the number of the last...
They were definitely in the, like, the 7 or 8 range. I don't think... Unless it's like an oversized, like fully collected. But if it's, if it's a volume 1, then I think they're going to split it up into 2. Which would seem odd... Because I feel like volume 1 should have hit already. I don't know. We'll have to look into it. I have a lot of repeat books on my list. I need to do this thing where I stop buying everything immediately that I'm not reading or not ready to go back to. Like, I have Lazarus number 28 on my list. I'm so far behind on Lazarus. Like, I'd have to go back to the beginning at this point. I also have Harrow County number 31, something else I need to get caught up with. Labyrinth Coronation number 4, I've only read 1 and 2. Abbott, I still have to read 4, looking forward to 5. Royal City, only read the first arc, so maybe. Saga 52, need to catch up with that as well. Motor Crush Volume 2, I'm picking up for Bronwyn because she's read Motor Crush Volume 1, I have not. So, really, the only two books in my list that I can actually pick up and read comfortably this new comic book day are Marvel 2-in-1 number 6 and X-Men Red Annual number 1. I'm also picking up Ms. Marvel number 30, but I am woefully behind on that as well, because I'm a terrible person.
How about Doomsday Clock? Are you going to buy that? Or you're done?
No, they've lost me. For a few reasons, but the main one being that when I read that book, and we talked about this on the show, I'm not getting anything from it. I'm not some huge Watchmen fan. If this thing was kind of hurried along and they didn't take forever and a day to tease it out and then have this event go on for the next 6,000 years before the Watchmen become integrated into the DC universe, I just don't care anymore. It's way, way, way past due for me. But that's fine, because there are other things going on. Yeah. I'm also reading Justice League No Justice, which ends this week. It's all right. It's not anything great. I don't know. I tried reading the new Avengers from Jason Aaron. I only got as far as one issue. It felt very much the same as No Justice. So that was kind of disappointing. I don't know. It's been a weird couple of weeks for comics. I've been finding that most of my enjoyment from books this year has come from either graphic novels or like one-off graphic novels or like some really solid miniseries. That's kind of been like the bread and butter for me this year. So, but hey, every week there's something different. Yeah. So.
And there's previews this week, by the way, everyone. So help your store out and put your pre-orders in, all that kind of jazz.
Yes.
So nobody's reading Amazing Spider-Man 800?
I actually collected... They had a huge Spider-Man sale on Comixology, like 87% off or something like that. I bought Slott's entire run. But
wow.
Yeah, no, it was super cheap. Like, some of those trades... The rate that they come out now, like, a few of them were $2.99 a piece.
Wow.
So, you know, that's a steal at that point. Like, I will go back. I love the character. I do like Dan Slott. At the breakneck pace that was coming out at the price point that it was coming out, there was no way that I could purchase it and keep up with it. So now at least I can go back and I could read like the 8 or 9 volumes, whatever it is that I bought. I'll eventually make it up to 800, but I don't usually jump into anniversary issues if I haven't been keeping up with the book. I didn't read the last Superman. I didn't read the last Iron Man. So it's just the way I roll.
No, I didn't read them either. I just didn't know if anybody else was.
Nope. I'm sorry.
Nope.
I took the question too far.
So, it's all good, though. Steve, the answer to your question about Mechadet U is it's number 1 through 4. It's a little confusing because apparently there was a volume one previews exclusive edition that came out in January. And then there's also a volume one coming out this week. So I don't understand why there's two different volume ones for this book. I'm not sure.
I don't know either.
But I just found the answer to that. And now I'm more confused than I was before. So it's only got 4 issues in it.
Good stuff. It's still a really great series. And any way that you can find it, you should pick it up and give it a read. Does anybody have any closing statements before we wrap up the show?
2 things. Ha!
Okay.
First, this past week, a little movie came out on DVD and Blu-ray called I Kill Giants. And so everyone who's heard us sing its praises, go pick it up. This movie could always use your support. And I watched it for the 4th time, and it is still every bit as moving and perfect as it was the first one.
I have a question. Remember when we did the video book club on I Kill Giants?
Mm-hmm. Yes, ma'am.
Is that still there if people wanted to see it?
That's a good question. I have no idea.
Okay. I will try to look it up.
I'm sure if you go to the Talking Comics YouTube, honestly, I haven't been to any of that stuff in forever. I'd be curious to find out if that's the case. I don't know. We'll find out.
I will check that.
Why doesn't somebody take a look while I read the end of show stuff? Bob, did you have anything else?
Yes, I did. I did wish her an early happy birthday, but I also want to wish Melissa a happy anniversary for 2 years of the Sirens of Scream.
Oh, thank you, Bob.
No, it was an awesome show. It got a little, little nutty.
A little wild.
Which was great. The ladies were sort of having an intercontinental sleepover slumber party with alcohol. But it was, even though you're in 3 separate places, the chemistry is so great between the 3 of you that you're in the same room just having a conversation about stuff. And it was absolutely great.
We decided to have like a long distance slumber party to celebrate our anniversary. So,
and it worked. It was marvelous.
And that shows up now.
It was silliness. Yeah.
Yep.
Awesome. Everybody should go and check that out.
Yes, you should.
All right. That's going to do it for this week's edition of the Talking Comics podcast. Joey will be back next week. We don't have any movies to review, so we'll figure something out. As always, you can send us your comments and questions through our email, podcast@talkingcomicbooks.com. We are also on Twitter @TalkingComics. Don't forget to check out talkingcomicbooks.com for news, reviews, and articles about comics, video games, TV shows, and much more. We have podcasts of every flavor, including Talking Games, Movies, Valiant, Adventure, Bendis Assembled, and soon, real soon, kind of soon, I don't know, I hear things, Ladies of Valhalla coming to Talking Comics. Bob, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, where can they find you?
Lately, it seems like I've been in the car at 47 hours a day, but generally speaking, it's Bob Ryer at TalkingComicBooks.com.
Long Island traffic, love it.
Yeah.
Melissa, where can people find you?
You can find me at Lissa Punch on Twitter and Instagram, and you can find me on the Sirens of Scream when I'm not here.
Carol Ann.
Email my last name and first initial, coca c at oldwestbury.edu. And yes, if you go to YouTube and Google Talking Comics, I Kill Giants, you will see a bunch of us fools talking about it for 2 hours.
Aw, nice. Baby Talking Comics.
Baby. And Killing Joke and Kingdom Come and Winter Soldier. Oh, I don't know. I only just
see if
made
I have
sure
a beard. Tell me how long it is.
Good old
I closed
day.
It. Melissa can check it.
All right. If you want to talk to me, you could find me on Twitter and Instagram at @dead_anchoress. So for Bob.
Happy Pink Flamingo Day.
Is that a thing?
It is today.
I love flamingos. They're so cool. You ever see a flamingo like mate or like try to do like its little dance where it goes across the water and it kind of bobs its head back and forth? For like weeks. For weeks they do this. It's crazy. Melissa, say goodbye.
Oh, goodbye.
Carolyn.
Happy birthday, Melissa.
Thank you.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday.
Okay, Marilyn.
To you. Melissa's okay. Be good to each other. Be excellent to each other. Say something nice. Give your mom a call. Give her a kiss. We love you guys. We'll talk to you next week on the Talking Comics podcast. To be continued.